I mean, you've had, I would say, as long as you had a couple of the players on the court, you could fill in with anybody on the rest of the team, and you're probably going to be a great team. I think if we split our squad, it would be a heck of a match.
Yeah, I'm sure they get more competition in scrimmages than they do a lot of their opponents, for sure, and that's fun to see. So let's launch into some of this things that have come out, news releases the past week. I always like to get your take about things that aren't directly related, but yet in some way the legislature deals with taxes and all in tax policy. So there was a release that came into my inbox last week about the Apple plan, and this is something that AFAN, or Advocates for All Nebraskans, announced last week, and it concerns a statewide petition drive for the plan. And the plan is a comprehensive two-part initiative to provide property tax relief and create a sustainable funding model for public schools. How much have you got into this, looking at the details of this, and how do you feel about it?
Well, I've not dug in, admittedly, as much as I probably should have, but I guess I'm waiting to see if they can get the signatures. I fundamentally disagree with what they're trying, or how they're trying to do it. I mean, this is really it's an epic tax, and it's the first epic tax proposal. They couldn't get the votes, or they couldn't get the signatures. Then they came back and decided, well, let's do something where we cut it back. Well, now we're on about the third or fourth iteration on how can we get that done. And I believe that the plan for the school teachers is just a way to try to get more signatures. And I guess if you throw enough things into the stone soup, you could actually make it stew. Okay.
But yeah,
that's what they're starting out with. Is if you remember the old story back when I was a kid, someone was going to make stone soup, and they heated up water and they threw the stone in the soup, and somebody said, "Well, I've got some vegetables and I've got some meat and I've got this," and they threw all that in, and when they got it all made, they threw the stone out, and everybody had stew. So that seems to be kind of what we're doing here. I'm having a little trouble understanding what they're talking about. There would be a base salary of $50,000. Having been a teacher, I'm fairly familiar with how the salary schedules work. And, they've always had a base salary for that first year teacher. And I've always said the first-year teacher is always grossly underpaid because they're being paid the base. And then they do steps. Every year of experience, you have a step up. And for every so many hours of education, you have a step. So for someone who's maxed out on years of experience and on educational steps, well, they're making significantly more than the first-year teacher. So are we going to save $50,000 for the first-year teacher and then have the steps as well? That would be a significant increase. Or are we saying everybody's going to make $50,000 and then there's just going to be basically an increase in terms of an inflationary increase? I'm not sure that, and that's why I don't think that NSEA is going to support it, because I don't know that the teachers are going to support that. So I think they're bringing it as a sweetener, and they say they're trying to kill two birds with one stone, but I think they're trying to get enough other voters to sign the petition so we can throw in something that you like. We'll then sign our petition and we'll get you what you want and we'll get what we want. And so, I don't know. The thing still comes back to the fact that all of these plans, none of them are saying, how could we cut the rate of growth of spending?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, again, I've always said to cut spending when you have inflation and increases in salaries and so on, it's kind of a pipe dream to say that we're going to cut spending. We can the first year or two or three, and then all of a sudden we get down to the point where we just can't cut any further. But once you get to that point, then you need to be looking at more like an inflationary increase, and that's what we're trying to get control of. And by doing something where we're just going to change the funding source, although I believe that property taxes should not be the primary funding source, we seem to be wanting to just identify sales tax as the primary funding source. And I don't know that you'd like the sales tax rate or what we'd be paying sales tax on if that's what we went to. I mean, right now, we need about $12 billion a year to run all of government, state and local.
Yeah.
And right now, we're collecting about $2.3 billion in sales taxes. So you can see what we'd have to do to sales tax either rate or the items that would be subject to sales tax in order to raise $12 billion, and then the next year closer to $12.5 billion and $13 billion and so on. So I think you got to run the math, and I'm not sure anybody has. So that's my two cents worth.
Well, yeah, the quotes in this story, a member of AFAN, Doug Fitzgerald, and he says, with a plan like ours, which would inject the property tax relief of $2.6 billion back into the pockets of Nebraskans, we could see a powerful multiplier effect on our economy and almost $150 million in sales tax revenue in the first year alone. So, I mean, I guess that's their side of it, but I'm with you. And what we talked about last week was kind of along the same line too. If you, the more you reduce the property taxes, you got to make up the difference in sales tax. Is about the only other way you can make that up, right?
Well, that's what I'm looking at. Is unless you're going to bring a plan that's going to cut spending, and I always tell people, please be specific now. What spending do you want cut? Okay? Tell me what you want cut. I know I kind of went after the county commissioners, but I will tell you that they're trying to do what the voters want on their part as it relates to roads, as it relates to other services that are provided. And every political subdivision has to look at what does the electric want in terms of services, and how are we going to pay for them? And every political subdivision has a limited source for which that money's going to come. So, and I think the AFAN plan really says we're going to eliminate or we're going to cut property taxes in half, and then to make up the difference, well, we're going to kick that back to the legislature, and they can figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a plan. That's really not a plan, because it's been kicked back to the legislature, and we're finding, I mean, the rural senators, for the most part, were all saying, yes, we have to reduce property taxes, and yes, we could raise sales taxes in terms of what's subject to sales tax to make up that difference. But that got billed as a tax shift, and a tax shift in their minds is a tax increase.
Yep.
And then we couldn't get the urban senators to go along. So unless we're willing to do that, this plan just forces that to happen.
For sure. We're visiting on Mugs this morning with State Senator Mike Jacobson, and also in the story it points out that to get the petitions on the ballot for November 2026, AFAN needs to collect just over 88,000 signatures for each competition. I'm looking at that saying that's going to be hard to do, even though there's a lot of Nebraskans that probably hear this and think that that's a great idea and I'm on board with it. But they're going to need a lot of people, canvassing the whole state, because they have to have a certain percentage in each county pretty much to make it work as well. It's not just pure signatures, right?
Yes, they've got to get a certain percentage of the counties, and then there's got to be a certain number of signatures that come from that county. So, yeah, it's got to be a statewide initiative, and some would say that those numbers are still too low in terms of what will be required, because it's just a small fraction of the registered voters. And I know everybody keeps talking about the will of the people. In fact, I received a questionnaire from the Nebraska Examiner saying, and it went to every senator, and they said, would you be willing to respond to this question, which is, what do you believe the will of the people is? Well, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out that we heard that come up several times during the legislative session as it related to the minimum wage bill, in particular, paid sick leave, and potentially what this would be or others. Well, so if we hear that, well, you need to realize that well over 50% of the voters voted for this. Well, no, well over 50% of those who voted,
right,
voted for this, not the registered voters. It's a much smaller percentage of the registered voters who actually vote. So we're not, it's not really, what is the will of the people? The other thing I would say is that if the will of the people would be a well-informed voter who votes for it. When you go, you hear advertisements on TV, newspaper, radio, talking about one side of a particular initiative. And if you say, well, okay, that's the information I'm going to use when I go to the ballot box, others kind of tune it out. They go to the ballot box. They read this. Would you like to raise the minimum wage?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm not someone paying wages, sounds like a great idea. Why would I vote against it? So I vote yes. But in the legislature, when we get something like that coming through the legislature, we have to put it in the form of a bill. We have to have a public hearing for it, where the public can come in, both sides of the issue, and tell you why it's a great idea or why it's a horrible idea. And then the committee has to vote on it. You have to get a majority of the committee to vote on it. And then you go through three rounds of debate on the legislative floor. So you get more input. So when I say well-informed, I would just ask the question of those who voted for, say, for example, minimum wage. How many of them considered all of the side effects and the impact of that vote? Because I can tell you that there are several small businesses that are out there today that will probably close because of the increase in minimum wage. Because now you can't negotiate with somebody how much this job is worth and what you're willing to pay. You can maybe make it work at $10 an hour for someone under the age of 16, but you're required to pay them $15.50 an hour. And you really can't afford to do that and make any money, so you just go out of business, or you don't start a new business until there are less jobs available. That is one of the side effects. And particularly when you get into small town Nebraska, where some of our smaller communities, the cost of living isn't as high as it might be in a larger city. So that's one of the things I always consider, and that I get a lot of calls from smaller businesses, which are many of the businesses in my district that I heard from, who said, we can't afford this. And So the legislature is able to make adjustments to petition initiatives, but they can't make adjustments to constitutional amendments. And those constitutional amendments require a much higher voter threshold for signatures. It's 125,000 mm-hmm. signatures. So
yeah,
that's one reason those things are, the ballot initiatives require fewer signatures, because the legislature does have the ability with 33 votes to make changes, and that's likely what will happen.
Yep. Another thing I wanted to get your opinion on was Governor Pillen's decision. Last week he announced that Nebraska will opt into a newly established federal voucher program created under the One Big Beautiful Bill, which the president signed into law earlier this year. And it says the program closely mirrors Nebraska's now repealed LB 753, offering tax credits to individuals and corporations that donate to scholarship granting organizations. However, the federal program operates on a much larger scale, impacting federal rather than state tax liabilities. And it says, unlike LB 753, it has no cap on total tax credits or on individual voucher amounts. How do you feel about that?
Well, number one, I have a little trouble with the headline. Does it actually say voucher?
It does in the headline. It says, this is from the NSEA.
Therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
They're saying it's a voucher program. It is not a voucher program. It absolutely is not a voucher program. That's spreading a falsehood. It is a tax credit program.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, what's the difference? Well, it's huge. It's a huge difference. Okay, a voucher program would be, you're going to give a family or a kid a voucher that they can use to go to any school they want to go to, public or private. Okay, and spend that voucher money. It's like a coupon. Okay, a tax credit, which LB 753 was, and what this Trump plan was, or is a tax credit. So it's saying if you give money to the school, then you're able to be able to get a federal tax credit. Okay, so if you're the governor, why would you say we don't want to allow our citizens to have a federal tax credit when other states are going to get the federal tax credit? Now, he's not able to obligate the state to pay for that, okay, other than the fact that your state taxes are related to what you pay with the federal taxes, but it's not the state of Nebraska, the legislature, having to fund it like that would have happened on LB 753. This is coming out of federal dollars, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a voucher program. Let's walk away from this weighty radio program with one fact that's been modified. It is simply not a voucher program. Every email that I get that's asking about this program, and it's a handful of emails, but from the very people I always expect to get emails from, are calling it a voucher program. It is not. Okay? It's a federal tax credit program. And I would say that any time that Nebraska or I don't know that there's even the governor opting into it is necessarily, he has very little to do with this program. In other words, it's a federal program that by allowing the Nebraskans to participate in it, they end up getting a small state tax credit, but it's a very, very, it's a fraction of what the federal credit is, because it's how you take your federal deductions and how you use those to calculate your state tax. And so it just reduces your state tax slightly, but not anywhere as close to what it would be under LB 753. So if the dollars are so small, and they don't have, and then it's really a tax credit, it ultimately becomes this very small tax credit for Nebraska. But in no plan, in either plan, does it say we're going to give you a voucher. But but they use the word voucher because that incites people. And so I don't know how you can take a group serious if they're going to lie to you about what the program is. Because they know it's a tax credit, not a voucher.
Mm-hmm.
But voucher is more, I guess, is just one that incites people more.
Yep. So thanks for clearing that up, Senator. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's always good to get both sides of the story, and we have a lot of misleading information out there, and appreciate you setting us straight on that. Anything else that you wanted to mention here in our remaining minutes?
I would just simply say that that as it relates to this program, this is the governor's decision. This is not a bill that's coming through the legislature. And the governor's going to decide whether or not Nebraska can accept what the federal government's decided to do or the president's decided to do. So it's out of my hands. And I don't expect that anyone's going to have the votes to change the governor's position on this. So I'm anxious to see how that ultimately settles out. But but it's not, no one's going against the will of the people. When, because I agree that that Nebraska took, the legislature brought two bills over as many years, and the voters voted against it. I get that. And as a result of that, I don't expect a bill to come back and have Nebraska fund the Opportunity Scholarship Program. But I don't think anyone's going to go against President Trump on this federal program. So that's the way I'm seeing it. You can convince me otherwise, but that's why I'm seeing it.
I'm sure there'll be some people that try. If they want to get a hold of you, they can always email you or call your office and leave a message. I know you respond. When they're actually your constituents, you'll respond to them.
Pardon me?
Yeah. You can give your email and phone number, and you'll respond when they are actually your constituents.
402-471-2729. And M. Jacobson with an O I'm trying to think again on the email address. I guess I don't send myself email.
that makes it tough.
It's any dot. Let me see.
I think it's leg.ne.gov, isn't it?
leg.ne.gov. Yes.
There you go.
Thank you for that. I got to start emailing myself.
Yeah. We appreciate your time each week, Senator, and hope you get over the cruds here, and hope to see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Have a good week. Take care.
Thank you.